Hi, everybody. Welcome to the PHF Future Considerations Podcast, Mailbag Edition. Instead of doing, like an hour and 40-minute long podcast, we thought of why don't we do like a little mailbag segment, give you bonus content, get another podcast out there. So we're going to go to the mailbag. We put out a tweet. If you have a question or a topic you want us to cover in the future, just at the Ice Garden. Maybe we should have a hashtag. Maybe we should have a Twitter
Just
account.
do the hashtag future considerations.
Boom, done. Problem
Because
solved.
it, you can do that with your feedback. You can do that with your questions, whatever. I'll be checking it.
Yeah.
If you want to make a fan cam of me, I don't know where you're going to get video of me, but I wouldn't complain about it. Or just fan cams in general, please, more.
Like fan cams.
But yeah, if you have any other questions, or if we answer a question today and it sparks another question for you and you have an opinion you want us to see, go ahead and use that hashtag.
Give us hot takes. Give us all, anything you want
Love
to
a
give
hot
us.
take.
Yeah, we love a hot take over here. Especially Dan, hot take. Levier is going to come back. Dan's a necromancer, bringing Levier back for the playoffs. Speaking of Dan,
Dead.
we hadn't seen her in a minute. Then she rises essentially from the grave. Dan, mailbag. What's in there?
First off, Eleni, you've been to enough games, I think, where there might be some camera footage of you out there.
That's true. I
So,
am usually doing stupid shit in the background too. Like I'm usually dancing or something stupid.
just putting that out there into the universe, we'll see what happens. Maybe nothing happens, maybe something happens. But yes, we have a lot of questions to get to, a lot of topics. I was honestly overwhelmed by a little bit by how many responses we got. I think I was thinking like maybe we'll get four or five and we can just kind of throw it in at the end of an episode. But pretty cool that we had enough. I think that we're gonna do this little maybe a little shortened episode, a little shorter than we're used to, which is gonna be nice. But yeah, let's get into some of these topics. The first one is, and forgive me, I don't have everybody's names written down on with all of them. Some of them we will have your names. But the first one I have is somebody asked about the next season. We're supposed to go to 28 games, right? Do you think teams are going to start preparing a little bit differently now going forward?
Will they? I don't know. But I hope so. Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I hope they do is load management. Because you see this in the NHL a lot where you have like one really good, perhaps even Norris caliber defenseman who plays 30 minutes a night and then he's dead inside the next day. Let's not do that. Especially because a lot of these people do have jobs also. So I would love to see cycling between, like, for example, if you've got a Fratkin Flanagan top pair, one of those games, maybe those aren't your top defensemen the next game. Maybe you let Lauren Kelly play the bulk of the minutes the next game. And the other thing I would really love to see people do is invest in your goalie tandem.
Yeah.
I sound like a straight up car salesman. Invest in your goalie salesman. I'm the goalie salesman. Invest in your goalie tandem for real.
goaltenders, come on down.
Slapping the lid. You can fit so many goaltenders in this bad boy. But seriously, please
Maybe we
invest in
got a
your goaltending
203
tandem.
goals against average. You could
It
have
will
today.
pay dividends for you to have at least two goaltenders who can perform at similar levels.
Tandems,
That's
yeah.
going to make a big difference in a longer season. But do I think they'll do this? There's no way to know.
I kind of follow suit with that. The thing, I mean, you touched on it already. I think we only had, I think it was either one or two teams. I think it was just the two te one team that didn't have three goalies signed this year. And that was, I believe, the Riveters. I mean, they had another goalie at practice. Dan reports Cassie Goyette. But I think it would be crazy to have a 28 game season and not have three goalies under contract, three goalies you trust to play in games. Because, I mean, this is not, by the way, I want to make it clear, like, this is not a shot at the Whitecaps goalies who came in to help after Lev was hurt. But you cannot find yourself in a position where you're scrambling to find someone to play a game at the pro level and face, when you're the team who allows the most shots per game, just like, hey, you want to play? When's the last time you played a game? We kind of need a just a warm body is what we need right now, and like it makes it, it's poor roster management, right? Even if you have an Amanda Levy who can play until she gets hurt. But if she doesn't get hurt, she can play every minute of the season. She's one of those freak athletes who just has that ability. But here's the thing. She shouldn't have to. And if she does that, she risks injury. So I hope we see teams look at that. I also think it'll be better. I mean, this year was so goofy with COVID stuff interrupting the flow of some seasons. Like, I hope the season is staggered out in such a way where teams have a bye week here and there, but they're not like off for 2 or 3 weeks when all the other teams are playing. And it's like, yeah, we haven't played since like November and they're playing a game in January. They're like, we kind of forgot how hockey works. Like,
and we don't need that. We're playing just rolled off of 2 wins last weekend in our home rink.
Can we have a nice balanced schedule? I hope that's another thing we see, but I'm down at Eleni's goaltender salesman lot. I'm here for goalies getting paid and support. And I like tandems. Like, I think they're being like, we even like, you think of Katie Burt's numbers this year. I mean, Lovisa still got starts. You have to give your goalie starts. Big. Yeah. And like, you have to do it. I mean, it doesn't matter how good you're. Like, Elaine Chooley, how great was her year? You still have to give, like, the six still gave Bridgewell and still gave Tara Hoffman starts because that's what you have to do. You have to do that not just for the goalies who are not necessarily your workhorse starter, but also you have to do it for your workhorse starter so that the wheels don't burn off when the playoffs come around. All right. Like,
we're mixing so many metaphors. I love it.
I
know. So much.
I have to stop. I mean, I was back on wheels. We're back at the car lot. So, yeah. Anyway, Dan, what do you think?
Well, we're horsepower. See?
Horsepower. There we go.
You both brought up the goalies, which I think is interesting. I don't think if Lev doesn't get hurt, I would say she maybe would have not played one game. And I know Chooley would have played every game. I don't know if she was hurt or had work commitments with the Boston trip that she didn't go on. And then she didn't play in the outdoor game because she was hurt. So I wonder if they would have gotten a day off. I'm not saying whether they should have or not. I think you play your best players, and those are their best players. But with 28 games next season, I'm not great at math, but I think if we have 8 teams as we expect there to be, that means 7 opponents, right? You want to play them 4 times each, right? Does that get to 28? I'm not sure. No, I don't think so.
Don't ask me to do math, please.
Mike is nodding, so I think I'm right. But
7 times 4 is still 28, so you're good. But
okay, so
but of course, you know,
yeah. I think we'll have a better. Obviously, you mentioned COVID that really ruined the schedule this year. I think this upcoming season we'll have a more traditional kind of schedule where teams will have weekends off, but not like 4 weekends off in a row, unless there's like some major blizzard, which, you know, in the year 2022 is certainly possible. We've seen a lot of crazy weather things happen. So who knows, but let's not throw that out into the universe. But I think we'll see. And I think it'll be better for the players. We'll start to get, we're finally going to have like a real off season where the players had a full season to kind of recover from, train, figure out what they need to do better, prepare for the next season like a normal athlete would, and not being robbed of ice time or this and that and the other because of COVID. And the 28 games is closer to what they play in college, right? So that's, you know, if you're a player coming out of college, it's not like you're showing up to play, you know, 11 games or 13 games. It's going to be a real deal. And that's actually, you know, one of the things that Emma Keenan mentioned in my interview with her. She went over to Sweden after college and liked the idea of playing that many games because they played 30 game season, I think it was. So that was one of the aspects that kind of turned her in that direction right out of college. So I think we will see some changes in the schedule as far as the way teams prepare, as far as the way the schedule actually looks. But we have to get to a couple other things, like what are the other teams going to be, right, before we start figuring out what the schedule actually is. Another question that came in, and I don't think we really need to linger on this one too long, is there was in some places there was a little bit of low attendance this year. I think we all can agree it's, you know, you're coming out of COVID again. Different rinks have different policies. rules and regulations. People are still, we're still a little maybe hesitant to go back out into the world. We'll see if things change going forward, but the teams maybe make a mistake on, you know, ticket prices, offering with, you know, like season ticket packages. I don't know how much money they make on those things. I've been to enough games where it doesn't look like it's much more than friends and family in the stands. And I often wonder aloud and in private, like, how much money are they making on the gate? I know it's a tough sell, and I don't understand why they didn't charge anybody for playoff tickets. That was a weird thing. Let's just give away all these tickets, have people claim them. That was weird. And then players' families weren't able to get some tickets in certain cases. So I think we'll see a change next year. I think the attendance will be a little bit better, but I also think the teams need to do a better job at promoting themselves. And getting people into the buildings. Sometimes I think they go at it a little half-heartedly, or they say they're, you know, and I'm not saying they aren't, but they'll say, you know, well, we're a little short-staffed. But then I have, you know, I'll say, like, certain situations where at the Riveters game, when they're playing after a Devils game, you have to have somebody outside to, like, really rope people in. You can't just not try and grab people coming into the rinks are literally right next door to one another. One of the exits tunnels right outside the entrance to your rink. You have to have somebody like ushering people in, even if you let them in for free, just to kind of get them the experience. And if they have kids with them, that's even better. They might come back. But I don't know. What do you guys think about the attendance this year?
It was fine. I mean, I lived in Boston, so I think it's kind of hard for me to compare. It's a little different there than it is other places. I thought this year was better than last year in some ways. Particularly, I felt Saturday night games was like a totally different, like, it felt like any other professional sports game that you could go to. Like, it, especially the third period, because usually what would happen is the kids who played between the first and second periods would stay for like half of the second period and then they would go home because it was getting late. And then all of the like buzzed adults would trickle down into the seats that were like closer to the glass. And that last like 40 minutes of the game got so rowdy and like people, it just felt like more maybe what I was hoping that these games would start to feel like. The players were feeding off of it. You've got people banging on the glass. You've got people screaming. You're chanting at each other. You're kind of chirping a little bit if there's like fans of the other team around you and doing stuff that maybe people aren't as comfortable doing when it's like mostly little kids. So I thought that that was good. But I also think that like in other ways, the league as a whole and Boston in particular slipped in their like theme nights, which are like a massive deal in terms of attendance. For any women's sports league in the entire world, not to go all out on a pride night is completely inexcusable. It is so much money, especially in a city like Boston, the amount of revenue that you are losing by not having like a legitimately serious pride night is just baffling to me. The last time they had like a dedicated pride night, I saw at least three of my exes. The entire building was packed to the brim with lesbians. They were all buying merch. They were all buying beer. They were all buying grilled cheese. And all of us are lactose intolerant. And it was like just the most ridiculous, like everyone was so hyped up. And this year they were like, oh, it's diversity day. And we're having someone, I think, from maybe Boston Pride Hockey dropped the puck again, something like that. And that was like the only mention of it. And that's a big, not even a swing and a miss, because I don't think I would consider that a swing. And then to have schools in these markets, any of these markets, have many colleges in them, to not go pedal to the metal trying to get college kids to these games is insane to me. If you go to any college or graduate student and you tell them, I got a hockey game for you, you can sit on the glass for 25, 30 bucks.
10 bucks.
Yeah, it depends on the place. In Boston, it might be like
10 bucks.
$10, you can sit on the glass. We sell beer. We sell wine. We sell pretzels. We sell nachos. It's like, especially in cities where you have NHL teams and the tickets are like pricing these kids out. Why are you not taking advantage of that? Like the number of people when I was in grad school where I was like, let's just go to a Pride game. Like it's cheaper and you can still get the experience that you want, which is screaming at people playing a sport, drinking your alcohol or your non-alcoholic bev, getting rowdy, like for way less money. Why would you not? Like, there has to be a college night. So I thought attendance was fine. I think there's a lot of room to grow. I think it probably depends on the team, whether or not there's profit being made off of it. I would love to see some of these teams move to bigger arenas at some point so that your attendance is not capped at 700 people. But, you know, we'll see. There's room to grow, but it was good. I thought the vibes were good, mostly.
I have a couple thoughts on this. It's interesting. You can watch a YouTube video of Joanna Boynton presenting at the analytics conference where she actually talks about what the league projects, where its revenue sources are going to be for the next 3 years. And like the gate is a part of that. The league needs money at the gate. Like it's pretty important to get money from the gate. I think like this year in particular, it really hurt my heart to see how good this Whale team was and to see how many empty seats there were. The league needs to do better marketing. They need to give teams a real budget to market themselves. They need to have teams go out of their way to collaborate with other pro sports teams in the area, find ways to get butts in seats. I also think, and I've seen folks very quietly complain about this, but I think it's important. Dan touched on this with like season ticket prices. Like we know that the people who are diehard about the league really keep it afloat. It would be nice if things were a little more balanced in terms of how much they draw from the people who buy these season ticket packages. They'll buy the special jerseys. They'll buy, they'll buy whatever price you want to put on a jersey. They'll buy it. I would really like to see the league find a way to balance things out a little bit more where they don't have to draw so much from the small group that is keeping the lights on, frankly. It's something I've felt for a while. I would really like to see that change moving forward with, and that change is, in my opinion, with advertising. You have to find a way to draw people in. We know people, every time new people come to a pro women's hockey game, they look around like, what was I missing? I'm an idiot. Get those people in the building. You have to find ways to do that better. And we've seen teams like, oh, we're bringing in an entire class. This entire, you know, Mrs. whoever's class can come in. Oh, an entire class of kids is here. That's wild. Like, you got to do a little bit more. It can't just be, you know, this a player on the team coaches these girls and that all those girls show up to watch their coach play. Like, you've got to find more organic ways to get butts in seats. But I think attendance this year, especially with COVID and everything else, it was fine. Like, the word I have for it is fine. Could it be better? Yeah. I was the Rotors games I was at this year. I was pretty disappointed with what I saw in the stands, despite a lot of efforts, I think, behind the scenes by the Riveters front office to get creative and getting people there. But also, you know, it's a pandemic. People are not used to coming out to sporting events. It's a big challenge. I mean, it's impacted every professional sports league. PHF was no different. They did the best they could. I hope things improve next year.
And something Elaney touched on, Boston didn't wear a special jersey this year. Toronto also didn't wear a special jersey. It's kind of weird. not one, but two teams didn't wear a special jersey. I think all those things are, it sells tickets, it sells merchandise, it creates awareness, it creates conversations, creates a buzz. We saw with the Riveters all the different jerseys that they had. I know I've joked about it a lot, but they did do really good PR-wise this year. The season before in Lake Placid was a complete nightmare for them. Let's call it what it was, right?
Did the Ribs have a better story this year than Black Rosie? Honestly.
Right, and they did really good with trying to, in a lot of ways, they landed, and in some ways they didn't. but they tried, at least they put the effort into kind of remake themselves and make themselves more approachable and acceptable. And then they kind of did a 180 with other things that they did after, but we're not going to get into that today. But Toronto and Boston not wearing special jerseys. It's a missed opportunity, right? I mean, I don't think we have to really dwell on that. Anymore.
100%.
You know, it's weird, but I don't know what the reason for it is. Expansion cities with adequate facilities. That's a question somebody had. Like the team, wherever they put, we believe one team is going to be in Montreal, right? That's what they keep saying. And then wherever they put this other team, there obviously has to be adequate facilities. So does that limit the pool of places that this team could end up?
Not to the point that I think it makes a difference. I think most places that you would consider putting an expansion team are naturally going to have somewhere. They're either going to have college programs or an AHL or an ECHL team. I also don't think the Montreal team is actually going to be in Montreal. I would bet any amount of money that it's going to be in Laval, which is, I think, just north. It's where the AHL team plays. I don't remember the size of their rink off the top of my head, but it would be a perfectly fine place to put a women's team. That 10,000 may not be where they play. They may play at a prep school or something. But I still don't think they're going to be in Montreal proper. My guess is that the ice time in the actual city of Montreal is going to be prohibitively expensive. I think it's the difference between like, all right, how much ice is there in Detroit that we can have access to versus Grand Rapids? Maybe we put a team in Grand Rapids instead. Maybe we put a team in Ann Arbor instead. You know, I don't know that it's going to make a massive
difference. Just call it Michigan. Instead of Detroit, just call them Michigan, whatever, right?
Yeah, whatever. Or they could be the Ann Arbor something. But like, yeah, you could do Michigan and then, you know, like Minnesota.
Right. That's kind of what I was getting at.
Connecticut, yeah. So that in hopefully in the years coming, maybe you move them to a bigger rink. Maybe they start in Ann Arbor and then they move to Grand Rapids and then one day and they're in Detroit. Maybe in Wisconsin they start, you know, at a smaller rink, a community rink, and they end up playing in the Admirals rink or something. I do think there is going to be a U.S. expansion too, as they've told us. I have no idea where it's going to be. I'm going to guess that it's in the Midwest because it's the only thing that makes sense. But now having said that, it'll be Nashville, it'll be D.C., it'll be Tampa, it'll be something crazy that doesn't make any sense.
Tulsa
makes more sense than half of those options.
It's still a plane ride from Minnesota to Tulsa, but it's, I don't know.
Less aggressive.
No, the way I think of it is like, I think of how many teams we've seen change rinks. Like, think of like the way the Riveters have bounced around like a ping pong ball around like the metro area. Like, I think what's more important is the region and it's what talent can you draw from? So like, to me, it's find hotbeds of talent. Find where there are colleges with programs and D3 schools, D1 schools. Make sure you have access to U-sport schools. Like, you can't really go wrong in Ontario and Quebec, let's be honest. Like, but yeah, like Eleni said, I think we're going to have, I hope we have another American team. I hope there's a team in the Midwest or at least a team that has some sort of natural geographic rivalry to Minnesota. It would be nice. But no, the good news is, there's plenty of hockey rinks in the world, and you know it's call it like it is. We don't need to find rinks that can hold 15,000, 20,000, 25,000 people. We need rinks that can hold 5,000 people. Yeah,
yeah. Like, let's just start need in a couple 1,500 to 5,000 range.
Yeah, we don't need to get crazy here. And the good news is, there's a lot of rinks with that capacity. There's a lot of rinks that, you know, there's. Where do the ECHL teams play? Where, like Eleni said, where AHL teams, like a couple teams in the league right now play practice rinks, NHL teams. Like, I mean, there's options there. Like, just like it's like one day, if, you know, if things continue in the right direction, like the Boston Pride will eventually outgrow Warrior Ice Arena. Like, that'll just happen one day. Guess what? Plenty of other places.
It has happened.
I was about to say they literally already have done that, but like, there's other places they can play that are in close proximity. And that's the good news. It's still a great question, I think, because you can't help but say, like, are there, like, where are their rinks? The good news is it's in the areas that are relevant to where expansion is going to happen, there will be options for rinks. Like, you can just go the list of AHL rinks alone. You just think of where these places could be, places like Milwaukee, places like Michigan, you know, like, there's options. Like, there's the Grand Rapids Griffins in the AHL. They have a, you know, 11,000 seat arena. Just, there's plenty of options, plenty of places where it could work.
Yeah, and you mentioned ECHL rinks. I think that's something that we're going to see probably more of in the future, where the ECHL and its teams partner with the PHF and its teams, and possibly
rest in peace the Brampton Beast.
Right, and we're gonna, like, we mentioned Tulsa, where the Buttes and Whitecaps played on our last episode. We went a little bit more in depth into it, but that's an ECHL city, and we're pretty much going to see another game in that rink, whether it's those two teams or the Buttes and somebody, or the Whitecaps and somebody, remains to be seen. But I have a feeling we'll definitely see another game down there. I just hope it's not after the season. Maybe do preseason, maybe do even regular season, right? We have an expanded schedule. You send two teams to Tulsa for the weekend to do a little bit of a showcase. Personally, I hope we go back to home teams playing at home for the playoffs and not neutral site again. But that's another discussion for another day. As we move along to the next question, which really wasn't a question. I guess it's a question, but it was a question, but it's not a question anymore. If the Whale win, does Shannon Turner return, or does she go out on top?
Wow.
I know. Obviously, the Whale.
I don't want to think about it, Dan. I don't like it.
And Mike is echoing what head coach Colton Orr said after the game when somebody started asking him, that poor soul who asked him, so what do you think about, you know, what kind of players do you think you might want to go after? Or not?
Oh, my God. That guy. After,
you know, like 15 minutes after the season ended. But
like personnel you want to replace on this team. What a wonderfully timed question that was.
It's a little bad timing. But the follow-up, I think, was from that person as well. And if I'm mistaken, then I'm mistaken. But the follow-up was a question that has to be asked just because of, I think, who she is, was, can you, you know, is Shannon coming back next year? Have you, tried to envision what the team would look like without her? Obviously, maybe not the right, you know, again, right after a game, but he was pretty choked up and didn't want to think about the possibility of the Connecticut Whale without Shannon Turner being a part of it. I think we're all kind of, all of us here are kind of in that same boat where we're big fans of not only the player, but the person, and what she means to that franchise and the league. I haven't honestly heard one way or the other what's going to happen. I haven't asked her, to be frank, because there's a time and a place, and I haven't felt like the time or place has been, right yet. It would be hard to imagine a season next year, a Connecticut Whale team without her, but, and it's a small but, not a big but, a small but, I think the Whale are in a better spot today than they would have been last year when she retired, quote unquote, and then unretired.
That's why she's got to stay, though. That's my thing.
I think
here's my thing, Dan. Ready?
Yep.
You, the Whale, tell the league, invest in stats, get stats right. Actually have accurate blocked shot stats. Tell Shannon that she's back. Problem solved. There's my answer to this one. Tell Shannon, not only do you get to stay with this team that we all know is going to roll next year and be great, but she'll actually get credit for the shot she blocks.
We're actually going to get.
I got news for you. Looking at the stats this year, they didn't do great on block shots.
Yeah, that's good. Those block shots leave a lot to be desired. I had a player say, "If this says I only had 9 block shots all year, but I feel like I just blocked 9 shots tonight." What gives?
It's not good. No, Eleni, is Shannon Turner going to retire? I wish you could see.
I mean, I guess we're all going to die one day, right? Like, she will.
Yeah, we all die in the end. We all rot in the ground, sure.
No, she will eventually. Is she going to retire now? I don't know. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about dying. I don't. That's kind of how I feel about it. Like, if it happens, it happens. I don't know. I hope not.
Okay. This is a perfect transition for the next question.
Oh, God, that's horrifying. Death?
We're just, you brought up her dying. That's kind of weird, but.
No, I'm talking about me dying.
No, I'm talking
about us dying when everything ends.
No, I don't think she's done yet. I don't know. I think depending on how much money is actually reasonable for a player to get paid next year, you might see a lot of people who otherwise would have retired before we knew that that investment is coming make the decision that they can stick around. I hope she is one of them.
Back up that dump truck of money and drop it on Shannon Turner. Make her stick around. That's what I say.
I agree. I think we'll see some players that will say, well, I'm thinking about, you know, maybe moving on, but I'm going to see what you guys offer me first before I really make the decision.
Yeah, and that's fair. And you know what? Those players, the players who are in that position, are in that. And Shannon Turner is at the very top of that list, in my opinion. Like, go get paid, Shannon Turner, and stick around. Win your cup. That's what I say. But that's just me talking as a reporter, I mean fan, I mean reporter, whatever.
As we move on to the next question, we'll try and I'll try and be as quick as I can with these. Player on each team most likely not to return next season.
These questions are brutal. I love it.
Yeah.
You were right. That was a great segue, actually.
It was a good segue.
I was trying to get to it, right? I was really trying to.
All right, I'll go first. Winnie Broke Brown.
Yeah.
Well, let's go. Mike, who do you think for Minnesota?
Winnie. We know she had injuries. I mean, I've been wondering how many years Winnie can keep playing. And looking at, like, I think a player who has her history should be so proud of what she's done already. And I think, you know, looking at the impact she had this year, just in terms of injuries, like, if she's playing, she doesn't want to just linger around. She wants to be part of the team. She didn't really get to be part of the team this year, to be frank. And that sucks. So speaking personally, she's earned the right to do whatever the hell she wants. But I know, you know, there's questions about, like, the Brote family in general, Jack and stuff. Are they sticking around? We know, like, Minnesota's looking for buyers. What does that mean about Jack's role? Yada, yada, yada. I expect this was our last season of Winnie. If it's not, that's great. If it is, an unbelievable playing career that will forever shape what we think of post-collegiate hockey and what you could have achieved in the era she played. Unbelievable.
And we'll go 3-for-3. I'm going to agree. I think it's Winnie. I think there's a few players that won't be back on Minnesota. But Winnie, I think, is one. If I'm mistaking this, that somebody told me the game that she got hurt was the one game they didn't play at Tria this year, was at Rossville, I believe. I guess the school or the name of the rink, but that's where she played kind of growing up. And I kind of was told, like, you know, if that was her last game, then she's happy that it was that rink.
It started where it ends, right? Yeah,
exactly. And that kind of leads me to believe that, you know, we probably have seen the last of her as a professional hockey player, at least in this league. We'll leave it at that. I don't know what, you know, I'm not trying to start any rumors or anything.
She's going to the NHL.
Damn, yeah. There you go. All right, we'll go next. We'll go to the Riveters. Who do you think will not be back for the Riveters?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, this is a different question. It's not entirely a question about retiring, so I'm not going to treat it as a question about retiring.
Most likely,
I think Madison Packer's done it. I think she's done. I think, you know, her wife has made it very clear why she didn't re-sign her GM contract. Madison is from the Midwest. If we get a Midwest team, no chance, no doubt in my mind that they bounce. And honestly, they should. Good for them. I think it sucks. They seemed like they had gotten really settled in the Connecticut, maybe New Jersey, Connecticut, somewhere.
Connecticut.
So that sucks, but there would have to be a lot of bridge mending for me to see Madison return as the captain next year.
Yeah, just so, I mean, I agree 100% with Lenny, just so I don't steal all the answers. Someone who I was kind of disappointed how the season went was Lenka Chermova, who, a former All-Star, never really got a chance with the Rivs, never really got ice time. I just hope personally for her that she moves on to somewhere else where she gets a different opportunity, whether that's North America or back in Europe, wherever it may be. But I don't feel like she got a fair shake with the Rivs, but I agree with Eleni. The other thing I wanted to add with Pac is, like, Packers accomplished everything. She's done already everything she can with the Riveters. Won a cup, all-time greatest Riveter. She doesn't have anything more to give to that franchise. And if her wife's done there, why would she stick around? We all saw her tweet at the Whitecaps. Like,
that would be really funny. I would really love to see Audra and Madison reunite on the Whitecaps. I think that would be hilarious.
Why not? So, yeah, that's where I'm going. I'll say Pack, and just to be a little different, I'll just add the extra one of Lenka. Because I think, if you're an all-star in this league, you're a player, right? And she didn't get an opportunity to really be a player with the Rivs. And that, to me, that was a disappointment because they needed defense.
Yeah, I would agree. Again, with both of you, with Packer, I if you asked me a week ago, my answer probably would have been Lenka Chermova. But the way things currently sit, I don't see any scenario where she ends up back there. I'm not going to go crazy and say she's going to go out to Minnesota. I say maybe Connecticut's looking to add a little depth to their lineup. Packers live in Connecticut. We'll see where the new team ends up being, yet unnamed, unlocated other expansion team. All right, we'll go next to the Buffalo Buttes. Obviously, we know Marie-Jo Pelletier, MJP, is not coming back, so we can't use her as an answer. I'll say this. I think a lot of the Buffalo players will be back, but I don't think all of them will be back. I think there's definitely going to be some changes.
Can I lead us off?
You want me to go first?
I'll
go
I was going to say we should have someone other than Eleni go first so I don't just steal all of her answers so I look like I have some original ideas. You can go first, Dan. Lead us off.
I'll say probably Elena Orlando.
God damn it, there is Vance.
I think that's the easy one, right? I mean, she was still living in Connecticut. She was commuting back and forth. And with her job, that she works a lot of long hours. I don't see that happening again. I could be wrong. And I'm not saying that it's her fault that, she did something that she doesn't need to be on that team anymore. Nothing like that. I just think sometimes you need to make changes and that was a move where I'm sure that they were very happy to have her mentor a lot of their younger players. They had some young players on D as well. We thought she scored a goal this year. She didn't. They took it away from her. I know that was something that really bummed that team out because they really wanted that for her. But that's going to be my pick. It's going to be Elena Orlando.
It's a good pick. We know that she kind of had to get talked out of retirement, talked into playing by Nate. One of those players who I quietly have always really rooted for, always liked. The most amount of games played by any player in the league without scoring a goal. So every time Elena had the puck on her stick and let a shot go, I wanted that puck to go in the back of the net pretty bad, I'll tell you. I'm a little curious by some of the language and some of the vibes I got off of Taylor Kersey, because I think that would be a big one if she doesn't come back to Buffalo. The other one I would say is just because we don't really see... Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't say that. We've seen it happen a few times, but Jenna Suoko, who really, I think, had a great year in Buffalo. I hope the Buttes do whatever they can to keep her around. But she might want to go back playing the Nostra League, and maybe this was a one-year thing, so that's another player to keep a close eye on for me. How about you, Eleni?
I think Taylor's done. I don't enjoy saying that. I think losing both of their captains in the offseason would be pretty brutal. Willie also really doesn't like that. He got really upset. I think it's tough to get across the border that consistently, and there are several of them that do it, but she's got a job and it's demanding, and she had to miss a lot of time this season for that. And you know, I don't know, some people's jobs are a little bit more understanding than others. I don't know if, you know, what the situation is for her. She's played several years and had, you know, some really great years in the league. And I think it's hard also sometimes to be that person and be like, you know, she's kind of in a different tier of adulthood than a lot of her teammates at this point. And to feel like you're like ready, they're young. That's a really young team that probably isn't going to be challenging for a cup, like super seriously for a little bit longer. And I think it's hard to play that many years and be like sacrificing with this other job, and you've got a partner at home. And I wouldn't be super surprised to see her call it. And if she has, what a career she has, easily one of the best players in the Buttes franchise history. And you know, I think her influence would be felt on that locker room, whether or not she physically is there next season. But I wouldn't be super surprised to see Taylor Dunn. I wouldn't be super surprised to see Lolo go back to Sweden or play in Finland or play, you know, somewhere a little bit closer to home. But you know, I think that she should also be really proud. If that's the case, she should be really proud of what she did in Buffalo. I think all of them should, and it would be a bummer to see any of them go, but those are my two picks.
Yeah, I could certainly see. I got that vibe that Mike did from Taylor after the game that they were eliminated. She did leave open the possibility. I was the poor soul or the bad guy that had asked that question because nobody else was going to ask it. I feel like nobody in whatever physical media were there that night didn't really ask them any questions. It was just us asking online. I'm like, well, I know it's tough after they lose 6-0, but like we have to ask something. But let's move on. Toronto, player on Toronto most likely not to return next season. Toronto's an interesting one to me because they had some players like Breanne Wilson-Bennett and Natalie Marcuzzi who were part of the inaugural team and didn't come back until late in the year, and they both had an impact. But I wonder if that commitment, if they're able to make that full-time commitment again for the following season. So I'm gonna kind of punk out a little bit, and I'll say one of those two players and not be decisive. What do you guys think with Toronto? Toronto's a pretty interesting team with a lot of younger players.
I think Tara Hoffman probably doesn't come back. I wouldn't be surprised to see her go somewhere where she maybe plays a little bit more. And it's hard to be the goalie that's not Elaine Chooley on a team that has Elaine Chooley with the season that she had. She did get to play. It's not that she didn't get to play, especially once Sam Ridgewell departed. But I would not be surprised to see her go to a Buffalo or something where maybe she gets a little bit more ice. She's got a lot of miles left. She's got a lot to prove. I don't think she's gotten a fair shake yet anywhere she's played. And I would not be surprised to see her continue to look for that perfect fit.
Just to be different, I'll go with Tori Charron. She was a player, like like you said, Dan's a young team, right? A 29-year-old who came in long after her D3 career. And, you know, she was in the lineup for 16 games.
And she played well.
They used her on the pen. She did play well. I thought she played great. Like, they used her on the PK. They trusted her with minutes, and she had a great year. But I wonder if they might look for a different option. You know, we see a lot of those, like, depth forwards who kind of come out of retirement. Like, I think of a player, like, another player on the Riveters, someone like a Haley Fraid, who is like, you know, is this a long-term thing? Or is this, I just want 1 year, I know I'm going to get some ice time, I want to be here. Want to play a season of pro hockey. Like those players, I think Tori fits in that category. So I wonder if she'll be in the picture next year, especially if, you know, Toronto can, you know, has a little bit of a bigger piggy bank and obviously lots of talent to pull from in Ontario. And, you know, you can really, you know, if you're smart with your money and smart with how you use the cap, you can really have a really balanced, deep roster. And that's something that I think Toronto is a team that wants to be competitive, wants to win a cup. with their new ownership group, I'm sure they're going to be aggressive. I think that's what we'll see happen.
It's actually one thing I haven't thought about is we are going to have expansion teams. It's plural. So that's more jobs being open, and that might be, you know,
players who can move back home and play and, or you know, move back to cities they're familiar with. Yeah. I mean, it's a big factor. We might see more player movement than a lot of folks expect just because players are going to have options. Like the players who want to keep playing will have other cities. Players who are like, oh, you know what? On this team, I was a third liner. On this expansion team, I'm a second liner. I'm on the power play and I'm getting paid more. I'm moving, you know, if it works for my off ice career, I'm moving. So,
There's a little bit more money involved, as we believe there will be in this upcoming offseason. So I think that's a big factor, too. We'll move on to Connecticut next. The easy answer here is for this exercise, I'm not going to pick Shannon Turner because we've already discussed her. Honestly, none of us know what she's going to do yet. Looking at everything else, though, I look at Connecticut, and I say maybe an Emily Fluke or a Kaylee Hutchison, a Catherine Crowley, three players who are all great players, really pain in the butt to play against. They make the ice out there is very tough and rough when they're out there. But they all have jobs where they travel a lot to get to and from practices and games. Hutchison and Crowley are both RNs, so they're working like 12-hour shifts, sleeping 2 hours on the way to the rink, and then playing a game, and then sleeping for a little while before they go back to another shift and another game. Those would, one of those three, I think, would be I would lean towards. We probably don't see, maybe not all three of them. I don't know, but I would say at least one of those three probably won't be back with the Whale next season.
Well, to me, the thing that's interesting about the Whale is, like, if you're a team like Boston, I mean, you've already done this if you're Boston, but there's some players on this Whale team you might want to poach. Like, you might want to go whatever. We're like, you know what would be nice is having Emily Fluke back. It's really something we should look into. You know, I'm curious because it is, you know, a lot of players on this team are young and good, been around. You know, it was interesting to me that someone like Rebecca Morse was in the lineup every game on the, you know, for this team. Like, Rebecca Morse is an everyday defender and on a very, very good team. Needless to say, she's like on a great team. She's a second pair defender in my eyes. But you know, there's players who've been around a while. I don't know if they'll keep playing, players like Hannah Beatty, but the player who I feel like might be moving on just because the Whale might look in a different direction is Jaanka Hlinka. You know, she played 16 games, depth role, but didn't really find herself on like an identity line, like that pain in the ass line that the Whale have. So I kind of fit her into that category of Tori Jaron, where it's like, okay, well, does this player have a future in terms of, can they develop? Can they really carve out a role for themselves? Maybe I'm selling Jaanka short, you know, and that might be on me, but I'm curious what happens there with the Whale. Cause that team, when you look at it, regular season champions, they want to keep that team together. They're going to do everything they can to keep that team together. But some stuff's going to be in our hands. Some stuff's going to be out of their hands. So we'll see what happens.
I'm going to go with Fuji because she has bounced around a lot. And I think she will go where she feels needed. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised to see the Whale go out and get someone kind of more... like between her experience and Abby Ives level experience, maybe they pull someone who's been in the SDHL or something to come fill in that sort of backup to Abby. And if they do, we might see Fuji, you know, pop back over to Buffalo, or I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see her not necessarily with the Whale again next season. Although if she does choose to stay and they are able to keep her, I think that she was a great fit for them. I was concerned she was going to break her hand during the playoffs because she was banging on the board so hard every time Abby Ives made a save. I was really worried about it. I don't think she did break her hand, thank God, but I was definitely concerned about it. I think that wherever she plays, her energy will make a big difference, but I wouldn't be surprised to see her bop on over to somewhere else next year.
Fun fact, Fuji actually stayed in Florida after the playoffs. So I think she's still down there now. She said something about, yeah, we're going to stay down here for like a month before we go back to Massachusetts.
I love that for her.
Because the leading up to the Lake Placid season, she was commuting from Massachusetts. But for this upcoming season, she actually relocated to Connecticut for the season. So she wasn't driving back and forth to practices and everything. So hopefully Fuji is back. Great player, great person. Really had a really, and I think we talked about this on another podcast, was a really nice story, I thought, this season for me. Really pushed Abby for some starts, especially at the end of the year.
That's what Abby needed, too, in my opinion. Shut out. Perfect.
Oh, I get so emo about it. And, just because I was there when she played for the Blades. Like, I was at Worcester Blades games watching her get absolutely just – she was just getting completely destroyed by the Calgary Inferno the last time I watched her play in the CWHL. And it just was very satisfying to get to see her have the games that she had this year.
She put in a lot of work, and she really improved herself. And Coach Orr had mentioned a couple of times that she earned every minute that she played, and we saw it at the beginning of the season and at the end of the season. And kudos to Fuji. Hopefully we see her again next season. Last but certainly not least, again, the Boston Pride. Who do we think will not be back next season? Mike, you haven't got to go on first yet, I don't think, so we'll let you lead off this one.
I have to do the toughest team to pick this one.
Boy, oh boy.
Do I say Jillian Dempsey? It's interesting. I this team and the veterans on this team, what else do they have to prove? Especially someone who has a career, you know, she's not going to walk away from. Demps being a teacher, it's the same thing. You know, we didn't say, but it's the same story for Shannon Turner. Is, you know, it's that's a tough gig to balance with playing pro hockey. I mean, we see a lot of people do it. Does not mean it's easy. I'll tell you that right now. I'm curious if the other thing that's interesting to me is, you know, I know the salary cap goes up, but in terms of, you know, you think of things like cap percentage, like can Boston keep all these folks around and keep them content? Like, can they keep Callie Flanagan? Does Callie Flanagan want to be here next year, or will Callie Flanagan want to be in the PWHPA's league? Especially if they're going to have a team in Boston, which it sounds like. So just to have a hot take, I'll say Callie Flanagan.
I think I'm going to say Paige Capistran, because it, assuming that you don't lose much else off of that blue line, she was kind of the odd woman out this year, and that's wild because she really is a top four talent, probably anywhere else in the league. And she played really well when she was in. She has a broadcasting gig that she's also very good at, because God just gives some people all the talent, I guess. I wouldn't be super shocked to see her go the way of Breezy and Meg Ricard, and kind of, especially in Meg's case, like, they hang out, they're around. Maybe she signs an emergency contract if there's injuries or something, but I wouldn't be super shocked if Paige wasn't on the roster next year. It would be really wild to see her play somewhere else, but I think based on how her job is, it would be probably really difficult to commute. And also, you've got players graduating this year from Boston area colleges who probably could make her spot kind of tough to fight for when you've got, you know, a kid graduating college who potentially doesn't have a full-time gig versus you with your full-time job trying to battle them for this extra spot and maybe play, you know, a couple minutes a game.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say Paige, or, you know, probably maybe a situation like we saw last year with Mary, or this past season with Mary Parker, where she comes back at the end of the season, add a little depth, somebody that everybody's familiar with. I really think they're going to keep most of their team together. I feel like I don't feel like we're going to see many changes. But, you know, maybe somebody offers Vic Hansen a little bit more money now that there's some more money going around and she can get some real starts. Goalies are always kind of tricky because there's only X amount of spots, but now we're adding a few more. So that'll be, I'm interested to see how that all plays out. We have a few more questions, topics, I guess, to kind of go over. I'm going to try and read through some of them and maybe we can just touch on them a little quick. The Players Association and contracts. I mentioned that some contracts had already been offered. I don't know if I necessarily phrased that right. Maybe it's just the parameters of a contract have been discussed. Like, hey, we'd like you to come play for us. What's your interest level? Like those kind of things. So Daisy, our friend Daisy asked, does this mean terms have already been agreed upon for next year between the players and the Federation? Probably not, because there's a lot of other things that they need to worry about first.
Yeah, unequivocally, the answer to that question is I'm pretty sure no. I do think that there are teams that tentatively had plans with specific players that they planned to bring back. But the way that this works, more or less, is that there is a standard player contract that is signed. So most players' contracts are going to look basically the same. It's not like the NHL where you've got all these fancy clauses that have to be individually negotiated. Pretty sure the only thing that gets negotiated for the most part is the salary. So I think a lot of stuff needs to be ironed out in terms of what the actual physical contracts end up looking like, which is why they've brought in Nicole, which is great. I know they've started to talk about it. But no, I don't think that there are actual agreements in place. I think there are probably individual teams and players that have had conversations. But there's going to be the whole offseason, they're going to be going back and forth about what's going to be in this agreement.
Right. And this particular situation, it was actually a player talking to a staff member on another team. It wasn't their own team. And it wasn't, nothing was agreed upon, but it was just kind of something that was discussed. And maybe when I phrased it, I didn't phrase it the right way on Twitter or wherever it was. So I apologize for that. Was the new director part of these conversations? Probably not, but the new director has been in, I think they agreed upon her taking over the role. It was before the end of the playoffs, before the playoffs started, yeah. Right? So just because they didn't announce it didn't mean that she wasn't already elected to that position.
They also weren't doing a lot of having conversations about it in general around the playoffs because like the players were busy.
And right.
So I would think from my knowledge, the bulk of the conversations that they have had, they have been represented for.
Right.
In some way. And the other thing this is a pet peeve of mine that I see on Twitter sometimes when people are like, the players aren't represented. The players represent themselves.
Yeah.
They do have PA reps, and the PA reps are completely capable of representing themselves. They do not need a white knight. And I don't like it when we talk about it like they are completely, like there's no point in having these conversations unless there's a director of the PA. I don't think that's fair. It is much better when there is a director, but the players represent themselves, and they are perfectly capable of doing that. But yeah, no, I think for the most part, they've had, you know, a director present for a lot of this, because a lot of it kind of was put on hold while they were in the playoffs.
Right. And that's an interesting point that you bring up, because I think a lot of times fans they may be thinking as the director, as the player agent, but the director isn't in every negotiation with every player. At least not in this scenario anyway.
No, the way it works is the director is the person that goes into the room with the board or whoever it is on the league side that's negotiating and their lawyer. And they sit down and say, all right, we were thinking the league minimum was going to be this number. And we were thinking the salary cap was going to be this number. And we were thinking, you know, the maximum that one player can make is this much for this reason. And this is going to be like one of the other things they might talk about is whether or not players can or should or will be compensated for like publicity events that they go to, stuff like that. Those are the general conversations. And then once we have an idea of what that contract looks like, individual players will negotiate their own agreements with their specific teams. Some of them have agents. Most of them do not. But they, because everybody kind of signs the same contract, they have a better idea of, hopefully they'll have a better idea of what's in it and what everybody else is getting, and what they can expect from the process.
I don't have anything to add, I'm going to be honest.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm always curious if we'll see contracts with term. I'm curious if there'll be transparency about things like performance bonuses and stuff. I just don't think we're there yet.
I actually recently spoke with a minor league player on the men's side who was talking to me a little bit about, he follows the league a little bit, and he was talking to me a little bit about how they handle the transparency issue in terms of, like, one of the concerns we had raised is that the players are not going to be able to successfully negotiate their own contracts if they don't have an idea of what their peers are making. And he said, you know, for us, there's a database, a contract database that we can access and our agents can access that shows us that information. So it's not like it's public. It's not like everybody needs to know. So if I feel like I really don't want my salary details to be public to everybody, which is completely valid, because, like, I mean, I don't want you guys to know how much money I make. Right? As long as they have the ability to, like he explained to me, we have the ability to see. So if I see this guy on this team is making this much money, and last year I had twice the points as him, so I think I should probably be making at least twice what he's making. You know, that kind of conversation is really what we want to make sure the players are, we want to facilitate that kind of conversation for them. So maybe there's some kind of in between where they have their own database that the players can access, or even just increase transparency player to player, I think would make a big difference.
Yeah, that's the stuff I'm most curious about, contracts, the way they work, and the way that might change with more of a cap and things like the new head of the PA and what contracts mean and all that stuff. Cause it's very interesting to me when, you know, when do we get to the stage where we see multi-year contracts, like true multi-year contracts? When do we get to the stage where, you know, players will be paid enough where players can actually be traded? And it's not just like, you know, the quote unquote trades we've had in the past. You know, where it was really just that players wanted to go to a different situation where they get to play more, could play less, and the commute was the same. So they're like, yeah, I'll agree to a trade, whatever. Yeah, that's what I'm curious about with contracts. That was a great question. Yeah,
that was a really good question. Another question, I think we talked about it a little bit, maybe at the beginning here and on the previous episode. But I believe this guy was in Tulsa at the games. But he wants to know, what would it take to get more exhibition games in the Midwest, specifically KC, but St. Louis is also acceptable. I think we're on that path. I think the connection with the ECHL teams, they had Allie Dunstrom and Jillian Dempsey, right? They went down to Jacksonville to participate in the ECHL All-Star Game. I think we'll start to see more of these games, and I really hope they're regular season, regular season games, where, you know, we bring the Minnesota Whitecaps and the Montreal Lavals, whatever they're going to be called, and we have them play two games in a weekend in Oklahoma or Kansas City or St. Louis. Let's start to expose some of the fans out in the areas that haven't necessarily had that opportunity to see professional women, other than the Dream Gap Tour, I think, has made a few stops out in the Midwest, maybe. I don't know.
They've done St. Louis.
Yeah, they did St. Louis. So.
And they've done Chicago. Those are the two markets they've done in the Midwest, I think.
Well, there's Minnesota. Some smaller markets out there too, like
native Minnesota,
Milwaukee, Grand Rapids.
They haven't even done a Dream Gap Tour stop in Minnesota. Well, anyway, I think that we'll get there. Yeah, I think that's true. I think what it's going to take is like having a connection there. Like Tulsa happened because of the investor that we've got that's got owns the ECHL team there. So if you or one of your loved ones knows someone who knows someone who knows someone. Let's get cracking. I will personally go to St. Louis and MC everything.
When are we going to get a game in Colorado, right?
When are we going to get a team in Colorado?
That too.
We're too far west. I understand we'll flesh out the Midwest first. That's fine. I'll wait. I'll be here.
We've got to see at least one game this upcoming season.
I think we need to I think the league needs to get more creative with stuff like this. Like, 28 game season, every team has 14 home games. Why not have every team have 13 true home games, and then we have neutral site games where you go to not these markets where you're thinking about building. You go and make it, it's an event. We're playing here. And if you're a fan in this area, and you've always said in the Twitch chat, I wish I had a team in my backyard. Put a game in different backyards. Put a game in Wisconsin.
Especially in places where you know the other pro sports in that area will help you cross promo. And that's, I obviously am biased, but that's a reason why I think Denver is a really, really good option, because the Avalanche love interacting with PHF accounts, and it would be super fun and super cool to put, you know, neutral site games in places where, you know, like, I'm trying to think of places like do Seattle and see if the Seattle Storm will do some stuff with you. Like, do something cool like that.
Vegas, do Seattle.
Do Houston. Do something like wild where you've got like an NWSL doubleheader where everyone goes to the soccer game and then everybody goes to the hockey game in the afternoon.
I love
like,
it.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, I'd like to see games selfishly in some neutral markets on the East Coast. I'm willing to drive to Baltimore, to Pittsburgh. I'll probably drive out to Ohio too. Maybe Tennessee, but that's a really far drive. But I might find a way to get down there if y'all do an exhibition game down there. But
go to DC.
Let's explore that. Let's not explore that for playoff games. If you want to do the All-Star game in a neutral market, I'd like to see the existing teams be able to host that all at least once, maybe. But I understand if you want to put it in, I guess, Toronto, it's going to be there next year because they have to make up for that, right? Because they had to move this one this year. But yeah, let's not do the playoffs in neutral sites. Let's do some regular season, even some exhibition. The Riveters in Connecticut played in Long Island. Is it in Long Island? Is it on Long Island or in Long Island?
It's on Long Island.
And I grew up in New York City, and I don't even know what it's supposed to be. But I think we covered a lot of ground. Would you all agree? We covered a pretty wide range.
There will always be more questions, and we will answer them. So if you have other questions, let us know. We also, there were some questions that we did answer in the previous episode when we were just addressing stuff at the end of the season. So if you don't hear the answer to your question and you have not listened to that episode, I would recommend it. In general, 4 stars. Not 5 because Willie really did scream quite a lot in that episode. it's just a little jarring. So yeah, thanks for hanging out with us again. I hope you guys enjoy your off season. Get some rest, hydrate. Go for a walk. You deserve it.
Yep, we had a lot of great questions. We appreciate every question. As Eleni said, let's do hashtag PHF considerations. If you want to ask us a question, we'll try and address it on some future episodes. I'm looking forward to the next episode. We don't know when that's going to be yet. It will be at some point during this off season.
It's a PHF podcast. We're going to do it when we do it. We probably won't tell you until it's happening, and you're still going to enjoy the shit out of it.
We've already started to line up some guests for future episodes, so that's something that y'all can look forward to in the off season. And everybody stay safe out there. Take care of one another, and we'll see you on the other side.
Later. Mm-hmm.